Hello and welcome to December 2023's edition of Library Chat with the Iowa Library for the Blind and Print Disabled. I'm Jody Aldini, Access Services Librarian.
I'm Angie Help, Technical Services Librarian.
And I'm Leland Smith, Service Specialist for the IMC.
Well, what are we talking about today?
Today's topic is Educated by Tara Westover. So I was the one who recommended this book. I actually put a couple out there last month as a group, and we were talking, and this is one that everyone chose. So a little bit of the synopsis is, born to a survivalist in the mountains of Idaho, Tara Westover was 17 the first time she set foot in a classroom. Her family was so isolated from mainstream society that there was no one to ensure the children received an education and no one to intervene when one of Tara's older brothers became violent. When another brother got himself into college, Tara decided to try a new kind of life. Her quest for knowledge transformed her, taking her over oceans and across continents, to Harvard and to Cambridge University. Only then would she wonder if she traveled too far, if there's still a way home. So, what are you guys' thoughts on this book? What did you guys think?
You know, I had a hard time getting through it. I appreciate where she started and how she got herself out of it. You know, the road she took, and she would work, and she didn't want to work with her dad, and she got into college in Brigham Young, and she, you know, went to Cambridge and then to Harvard, and she did all this with not stepping foot in a classroom until, like you said, 17 years old. You know, if that were me, not wouldn't have happened. But I don't know why I had such a hard time getting through it. Part of it was it's almost like, you know, they'd start to swerve one way and then they go right back to the other way. And then they sort of try to get out and then they revert back, you know. And that violent brother was just – the dad just irritated the crap out of me because he wouldn't take both daughters' word for it. And the mom knew it, but she would always cower down to the dad and – maybe that was just part I didn't like, was just the power that he had to...
Over the entire family?
Yeah.
I did really enjoy this book, but I really enjoy autobiographies or memoirs of people who, you know, boots on the ground, like, you know, like this or Made, where, you know, people really have to work hard to get what they want in life. So I don't usually gravitate toward like the celebrity biographies, except for one Leslie recommended it. It was a hoot. But I usually gravitate more toward these type of books. So I really did enjoy this. Her brother, was it Sean?
Sean.
Yeah. That one was kind of...
He was scary.
Yeah, he was hard to stomach, but Tyler, at the end of the book, when he kind of stood up for her.
Yes.
That warmed my cold little heart. So
Yeah. And I think maybe that was a big part of it was him, because he was scary. And knowing that it was – this girl really had to deal with this.
Yeah.
And I couldn't imagine my brothers being like that. You know, I'm sure you guys who have siblings think the same thing. You know, our siblings are the best, you know.
Yep.
I have the best big brothers. And
I got siblings. They're kind of crazy.
Well, there's always cray-cray in every family. So yeah. let's just face it.
I really loved how it was kind of laid out, though. Story-wise and kind of progressing in different views, I feel like that was very well done. In the hot cold with the sibling relationships, though, I can see that. And just seeing the reactions just being so real, like I really appreciated the writing on that. And it was very hard to stomach some of those scenes because they were very... real and vivid and oh my gosh, how could this happen? How could the father let this, you know, go on? You know, and just horrible to read, but at the same time, it was well written.
Right.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was a very well written book. It was very hard to stomach parts of it, especially like when her sister kind of turned her back on her after, like,
after wanting her to be back her, and then she turned around and
then she's like,
"Stuck the knife in, man.
Nope, I'm going to cartwheel down this hill I just climbed."
Yeah. Well, and the part that really disturbed me the most was when Tara had told the dad what Sean had did, and she went to the bathroom, come back, and he had called Sean, and then he's coming over, and then he comes and sits next to her and hands her a bloody knife.
Yeah.
And so she's thinking, oh my gosh, did you know he kill his wife?
Yeah.
But he killed his dog.
Yeah.
The son's dog.
Right. Yeah. He killed his own dog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Josh, did you read it?
I did.
Did you?
No.
I was going to say, aren't you going to chime in?
Josh has jokes.
Oh, yes. So for those who may not know our recording situation, we have Josh in here with us keeping track of our audio levels so it sounds nice and high quality.
Yeah, versus what we had to do to before.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's such a difference because this is what our 12th one doing this, because we were introduced in January that we were going to start taking over this podcast. Mm-hmm. So our first one where it was just us three was February, but really it was January because we were transitioning then. So it's just – it's amazing to see how far we've come since January with just – was it January? Yeah. I was like, I already forgot. But just seeing how much we've grown in recording this, like, I feel like we're a lot more comfortable talking.
Yeah.
And the setup is a lot better than what it was. Because before we were just, like, on a digital recorder with, like, really nice microphones, basically.
Yeah.
And now we got headphones and microphones and Josh over in the corner doing his wizardry. So it's a lot nicer than what it was when we started.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Josh.
For making us sound good. The crowd goes wild.
Let's get to the questions. So I ran out of time this week, and Leland so graciously found questions for us.
And a list of characters.
Yeah.
Okay, so character list I put together for my own sake.
Okay.
There are, what, 5 siblings?
Seven.
Seven kids
total.
I could not keep track of them all. So I'm like, I'm going to jot down some names because I won't remember. And you, we're going to be sitting here going, oh, that one. Which one? That one. I don't. You mean this one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so helpful list of names.
Yeah, I'm still confused about the order of the kids. All I know is Tara was the youngest.
I know Tony's the oldest. Okay, we can play this game.
Was? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Honestly, I forgot there was a Tony.
Yeah, because he was the one who got out first.
Okay.
And he was the trucker.
Ew.
That started being kind of, you know, breaking away, do his own work, but his business collapsed, and then he ended up back with his dad working in that, you know, the miracle water that they were doing, that the whole...
Oh, the what the mother started?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
which became very popular essential oils.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy, right?
Absolutely wild.
I actually did find... I went down a rabbit hole on Google and actually found an interview her parents did afterwards, like saying, nope, none of it's true.
Oh, debunking the book?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
well,
that.
Of course they're going to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, nope, that never, blah, 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 blah. So that was really interesting to see, especially after reading the book. Because her mom or dad, anytime Sean would do something, would call later or, like, talk with her later and say, that's not what he meant. He actually meant this. So the interview was similar to that, too, where they're like, nope, that didn't happen. And it's like, well, you're not known for, you know, being the most forthcoming with the correct truth.
Yeah,
exactly.
So
exactly.
I also like to point out in the book, there are some areas where the author herself did mm-hmm. not paint her own actions well. Mm-hmm. Like, there's times where it was very raw and very open, and I feel like that leans a lot of credibility to mm-hmm. what she's saying, you know, mm-hmm. retelling the story, because let's be honest, you know, if you're trying to embellish things, you're going to embellish more than just the other side, but your own actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So who knows on that?
Yeah.
Who knows? Okay. Mm-hmm. Was there a favorite question that you had, Leland, when you were putting this together?
All of them seemed very fun.
Okay.
We could work our way down from the top.
Okay. Okay. Number one, an educated Westover writes, "Everything I had worked for all my years of study had been to purchase for myself this one privilege, to see and experience more truths than those given to me by my father, and to use those truths to construct my own mind. I had come to believe the ability to evaluate many ideas, many histories, many points of views was at the heart of what it means to self-create. How do you know something is true? What is something you once believed was true that you later learned was not? Are you willing to take someone else's, a parent, a teacher, a religious leader, words as truth? Why or why not?"
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This makes me think of when I was at Briarcliff, the counselor and I, it was originally her idea and she was really good at getting people, but I was like, oh, well, we need to organize it a little bit. Ironically, I work in the library. I like to organize. So we would put together a human library every year, and we would have about, I would say, 30 to 45 participants who would come in and share their stories, and the students would come and talk with them for about 15 to 30 minutes and just ask them questions and whatnot and really interact with people from a, you know, different walks of life that they normally wouldn't interact with. So I think through doing that event and, you know, just talking with, because I would make a point to take an hour out of the event to actually go bop around tables. I'd be like, okay, well, this table doesn't have a student sitting there. I'll just go talk to them until somebody walks up. So I think through doing that, it really opened my eyes and like to other people other than what I just grew up with. Mm-hmm. And that's really changed some of my viewpoints to where they do not align with, like, my family's sometimes. So that's one thing. Like, I'll hear somebody say something. I'm like, nope, that's not true. And sometimes it depends on what it is. I'll speak up about it. And sometimes it's like, well, I've spoke up about this in the past. I know I'm not going to change their mind. Let's just move on. So I think similar to her, like, having those experiences really does change your viewpoint and makes you become who you are. And sometimes it doesn't align with what your family thinks or,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but, in my case, like, I still talk to my family. I still love them. We just think each other's crazy, but like Jody mm-hmm. said,
right.
We're all cray cray.
We all got some cray cray in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, my family's not, you know, extreme survivalist either.
No.
And that's the thing too, the matter of truth, like, even if you trust someone, you respect them, mm-hmm. just because they say something, you don't automatically have to believe it. I feel like as kids, we are so quick to take whatever people say to us as just solid fact.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like part of growing up is beginning to kind of realize people can be wrong. People can have different beliefs than you, and you don't mm-hmm. have to have the same belief. So things don't have to be true that, you know, well, just because, you know, your parents say it or just because a friend mm-hmm. says it, you can question it.
Yeah.
And you should, and just kind of reassure yourself on what you're doing and what you believe is truly what you want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really powerful to think. Because you can easily just take anything people say at what they say and just believe as truth. But you would be a totally different person than you are today if that was the case, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you'd be more reflecting off of, like, you'd be more like that person. Just think about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
you believe everything one person says, and you're just kind of a copy of them. And I see that a lot in this book with some of the kids mm-hmm. and the parents, mm-hmm. how the kids are just like agreeing to everything and just going with it.
Yeah.
It's mirroring
well,
to the next generation.
And Angie and I had talked before, and it's basically they were kind of like a cult.
Mm-hmm.
So the
yeah.
dad was just – and the mom too. I mean, she'd say one thing away from the dad, but then – say that, you know, agree with him
yep.
when she's near him. But, you know, they were just basically brainwashed.
Mm-hmm.
But they, you know, that's all they knew.
Yeah.
There was, I mean, nobody else around really. So.
Yeah. Okay. What is this next one? Okay. Educated starts with a paragraph from Virginia Woolf. The past is beautiful because one never realizes any emotion at the time. It expands later, and thus we don't have complete emotions about the present, only the past. What do you think Woolf meant by this? Why do you think Tara Westover chose to begin her memoir this way?
I love this question, especially put in context that this was placed at the beginning of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of stopped and thought about this myself, and I feel like over time our emotions do change on events. Like right then in the moment, maybe you might not have a strong reaction or you have a really strong reaction, whichever way. As time passes, your emotions on that kind of deepen, mature. Sometimes they get clearer. Sometimes they get muddier. And so I feel like that's just a really intriguing thought to have on there about how your emotions change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it also kind of, like, gives you an segues into, like, she does start the memoir at the beginning of her childhood mm-hmm. and goes through to when she's adult. Because sometimes I know they start at the end and then go mm-hmm. back to the beginning, but this one was very linear. So this kind of...
Yeah, she went straight through it. It wasn't going back and mm-hmm. forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah. So that was nice because it kept my brain very sane. I'm like, okay, there's just one timeline I have to worry about.
Yeah, sometimes when they get multiple in there, I'm like, I'm going to read another book.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much going back and forth.
Yeah.
I also feel like her reactions to things from, like, her childhood, it's very clear where her emotions stand. But then the newer, later events, when she's an adult, it seems very, like, there's not a lot of emotion there besides just this happened and I don't know how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that was very much portrayed throughout the telling of her tale.
Okay, next question. At one point, Tara's father makes the case that his form of homeschooling couldn't have been that bad since three of his children went on to receive their PhDs. What do you make of this? Did his children succeed in spite of their education, or were there some inherent lessons about how to learn imparted by this non-traditional form of education?
I don't know that they had any education once in a while.
Yeah. I feel like it was maybe a combination. Like mm-hmm. they did learn a lot growing up in the environment that they did with like their oils and growing and canning and like.
Well, that. Yeah, I suppose you're right there.
Yeah. Like just working the scrapyard and things like that. But the ones who I feel like. It was a little bit of both because I feel like they wanted to succeed in spite of where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it was kind of a little bit of both.
Yeah, they didn't want to do that forever. And
mm-hmm.
I mean.
And how do you get out of the situation?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Education.
That's the only way.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. also their resilience as kids, what they had to go through, they kind of took a lot of that into their schooling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things weren't ideal. They just kept pushing forward because they knew they had to. Other kids don't have that drive.
Mm-hmm. Just look at, the accidents that they had.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't allowed to go to the hospital. And, the mom had to nurse. Some of them probably should have died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, like the dad after that accident.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, how did he even make it?
Yeah, exactly.
With such severe burns and
and he was coding all the time. And it's like,
right, yeah. How in the world?
Yeah.
No clue.
Or the brother that they stuck his leg in the trash bag in the bucket with the ice.
Uh-huh.
That was burnt too, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
His pants caught fire.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Had gasoline on them and caught fire, and instead of dropping and rolling, he ran.
That's the opposite of what you're supposed to
do. Yeah.
Right.
But I believe he was like, what, 13, 14? I don't think he was that old when it happened. But that was kind of like the panic reaction, though.
Or like the mother in that first accident. You know, she had a severe concussion.
Yeah.
It's a wonder she even survived. Mm-hmm. That's another thing about the dad. But, oh, we're going to leave right now. So they started driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At night to come from Arizona. Had that accident, and then they went back down to Arizona. Same thing. Well, we're going to go at night and had another freaking accident. Yeah. It's like, are you stupid?
Maybe don't drive from Arizona at night. I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah. And then there was ice on the road.
And then the idea of, oh, it's fine. I'll show you can drive on ice.
Yeah.
I don't remember if that was with one of the brothers or if it was dad. Just kind of showing like, oh, we are protected. We'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How might Westover's life been different had she chosen not to leave home and attend college? What risks did she face and what fears did the author have to overcome in order to leave home and pursue her higher education? How did Westover change as a result of her formalized education? One thing I noticed is she was more willing to accept help. Because at the very beginning, when she started at BYU and she needed that root canal, she wouldn't take the money. She just suffered through it. She didn't even want to take ibuprofen for it. But towards the end, when she knew she wasn't doing well, I think that's when she started to go to counseling. She was more willing to accept help the further she progressed in her education, in her higher education. That was one thing I really noticed about that.
Also, her awareness of the world outside of just her family.
Yeah.
If she never left home, she would never know anything about the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And going to college, that was when she started realizing how much she didn't understood or didn't know about. You know, like, and the question about the Holocaust comes up later.
Yes.
That's a whole situation.
That's actually my next question.
Yeah.
So we'll talk more about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Joe, do you got thoughts and ideas? How her life would turn out?
I think she would have eventually ended up somewhat like her mother.
Yeah.
And her sister.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Dad knows best, or the patriarch knows best, and, you know, nothing's going on and everything under the rug. And
oh, yeah. I definitely think her father would probably have found her a husband and married her off.
Or she would have lost a hand.
Yeah. Or a foot.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So leading into that next question is, why is it significant that Westover didn't know the word Holocaust and had no knowledge of race issues in the United States? How does her view awareness of racism evolve throughout the book? Well, like you said, she became aware of the world more.
So there's two parts of that really stuck out to me in the book. The first one being the fact that she never heard the term Holocaust applied, but she did learn a little bit of, you know, like she mentioned that maybe her mom had mentioned it during, you know, going out and picking herbs, about that there was this thing going on, people were dying, but in her head, it was not that many people. It was a couple days, wasn't a big ordeal. And then she discovered how, you know, big of a ordeal it was and world-changing. And that's when she started understanding there's a lot more going on. And then the instances with race in the United States, she thought that stuff happened a long time ago. She didn't realize it was just, you know, a couple decades back. In her head, she thought it was something that happened long, long time ago, and we're over it now. She didn't realize
it wasn't a continual thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so just those realizations were so deep and like earth shaking.
And you can almost by reading that, you can almost see the light bulb going off for her.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's just amazing how that came through. I listened to it. So, I mean, I don't know if it was different but from just reading it visually, but you could really tell that by I think mm-hmm. the author did or a narrator did a great job.
Yeah. So I've read it twice now. I read it in print a couple years ago, and then this time I read it in audio. But I agree with you on the narrator. She did a fantastic job. But the narrator actually wrote a rom-com about narrators.
Oh, really?
And then she narrated the rom-com that she wrote about narrators.
Oh, that's funny.
So So you'll have to read it. We'll post it in the show notes too. But yeah.
Yeah.
When I was like, this sounds familiar, and then I looked it up, I was like, oh, she's the narrator who wrote a rom-com about a narrator and then narrated the book. It just made me chuckle.
Yeah.
Okay, so next question. Okay, so Westover makes great efforts to ensure the story is as objective as possible, including footnotes where accounts of events differ or comparing her diary entries to her memory. As a reader, how important is objectivity in this story and more largely in memories in general or memoirs in general? Well, one thing I noticed is there were a couple times where it would specifically say, you know, this was taken from such and such events maybe. I'm not sure. I can't remember the technical phrase mm-hmm. they used. But it was like, hey, this might be – this was from my diary or whatever, and may have been adjusted or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So when those were in there, I made sure to really keep an open mind with the event that there might be some discrepancies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, especially if it was taken when she was younger. And
right.
when you're younger, things might seem bigger or larger.
Or more dramatic. Or
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in this book, I really appreciated those caveats because then you could just be aware that there might be some differences in that situation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or that particular paragraph or event. Mm-hmm.
It was also really nice knowing those areas that there's that unsure, you mm-hmm. know, that unknown element, because this is how she remembered it. Doesn't mean that's how it happened, but also how you remember things is what ultimately makes the biggest impact on you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even if, say, the event wasn't as traumatic, if you thought it was and you remembered it being very traumatic, mm-hmm. that has an impact on you.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool, also kind of seeing that aspect of it as this is how she believes it went down, and so she's going to base things off of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And also with the whole Luke, I believe it was Luke who had his leg catch fire. That whole event, there's so many different tellings and different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was the father there? Was the father not there?
Yeah.
You know, like going back and forth, you know.
You know, who put the ice in the bucket?
Yeah. Like all those little details ultimately matter when you're talking about like people's characters,
mm-hmm.
right? Did the father actually just stand off and not do anything, mm-hmm. or was he actively trying to help? You know, like, all those details do make more of an impact on the person's character and understanding it. But at the same time, you know, even if the father was there or wasn't there, trying to help, not trying to help, things still played out how they did,
mm-hmm.
right? The
mm-hmm.
son was injured pretty badly from something that his father was, you know, having him do and mm-hmm. not being careful about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very fun. I like that objectivity.
Mm-hmm. At BYU, Tara recounts going to a professor for moral advice and instead being encouraged to apply for a very competitive study abroad program at Cambridge University, which she never imagined she could qualify for. He seemed to say, first, find out what you are capable of, then decide who you are. Has anyone ever given you advice to do something beyond what you thought you were capable of, and did you follow it?
No.
Leland?
Definitely. A lot of different aspects of my life. Now, how the end results turned out, some were good, some mm-hmm. were bad. I learned stuff from them, guaranteed, but some were pleasant memories.
No, actually, you know, I don't want to mm-hmm. degrade my parents in any way.
Yeah.
But they were of the mindset that because I was blind, mm-hmm. that, you know, because I the job I had, it was a struggle sometimes just because the people and anyway. And they said, well, you can't quit. You'll never find another job, you know. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to hire you because you're blind. And, you know, that it was just because they were afraid for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, they, you know, they were just so sheltered, I guess.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
so I was – heck, I was sheltered as a kid. I didn't get to cross the street till I was 13. I
like by yourself or all? Did you just live on a square?
my grade school was two blocks up the street. Do you okay. think I could walk to school? Oh, no. Mm. Couldn't walk home. And if I was about sixth grade before I could walk home. It was terrible. I was so overprotected. But anyway, so they never really pushed me to say, you know, but they never knew anything about blindness mm-hmm. or anything. And so I was 21 when I lost my vision. So but it wasn't until I come to the department, went through the orientation center, that I realized I'm definitely way more capable than what I had thought I was. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't anybody telling me that, like that professor. It was just yeah. I just decided when I need to do this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And
I feel like in a way, though, you told yourself, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's true.
Like when you get
mm-hmm.
going to those situations where you're not very comfortable, you're either being told you should do it and you're following, or you're saying, I know this is going to suck, but go out there, go do it. It's going to be an experience. Just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it can go either way, mm-hmm. internal, external.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, too, when I was soloing to the grocery store to get my groceries, I would tell my mom, I said, I'm going to go to the grocery mm-hmm. store, get the bus and go to the grocery. She said, will you tell me what time and your dad and I will follow you? No, you can't. So I wound up saying, you know what? I'm not going after all. I lied to him. And then I went and come back and I said, well, I lied to you so you wouldn't follow me. But I got there and back all by myself.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it was a combination of, I think, internal and being stubborn.
Yeah.
when I put my mind to something that I'm going to do, I'm going to do it. And, like, you might think I'm crazy, but it is what it is. Like, when I remember when I went back to – when I had decided to go back to grad school, because I was working at a coffee factory in the front office at the time. And I had been there for a year, and I was like, okay, like, I do like this company. We're like a family, but this is not what I want to do forever. So then I took a real hard look at what I wanted to do. I was like, okay, well, I want to go back to school and get my degree in library sciences, and that's what I want to do. And do you know how many people start grad school while working at a coffee factory? There's one. Everybody thought I was crazy, and I remember when I put in my 2 weeks because I got my first library job, one of the guys looked at me and he's like, you really did it? I was like, well, what do you think I've been doing for 3 years? So mine would be a little bit of an internal and this is what I'm going to do. And I'm stubborn and hard-headed. And
how old were you when you did that?
Oh, I was 29.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was later, 28, 29. I had decided back in 2012 that I was going to go back to school. And I started in 2013.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, good job. You're here with us now.
Yeah. Doing what I love. When I talk about my job, I was like, oh, yeah, I work at the Iowa Library for the Blind. They're like, what do you do? I was like, well, obviously, I play with books all day.
Sitting on the podcast, you know.
Yeah. Where I get to talk about books.
You know, because I don't. This is a breakaway probably from what we're
needing
to talk
about.
We
haven't had one yet, so we're doing pretty good.
But I don't – and I was guilty in the beginning too when I first started working in the library because I thought, what is there to a library? You check out some books. You put them back on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that think that about a library.
Yeah.
But there is so much more to a library than just checking a book out and putting it back on the shelf. So much more. I would have never believed, but this is the best.
Yeah, hands down.
Mm-hmm. Best mm-hmm. job I've worked three different positions. Oh, I did like working in the orientation center, but then I had to go to AIDS Devices, and then I came here. But this was this,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Hands down, working in libraries is like where I was meant to. I did work in a call center for about a year and a half, so that really gave me the training I need to provide excellent customer service over the phone. So I really think that as much as I did not like that job, and let me tell you, I have never quit a job faster than that.
Really?
Yeah. Even my seasonal jobs, like I stayed at for 10 years. I would just go back every on and off for 10 years. But nope, this call center one, I was in and out in a year and a half. And that's the quickest I've ever quit was 18 months.
Wow.
But it really developed the customer service skills over the phone. Mm-hmm. That's honestly the most beneficial thing to when I answer the phone now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took a – it was a PDS class. I think there was a couple of them, but I went to the customer service class. Yeah, I've learned a lot from those. So, yeah, I use a lot of that when I'm on the phone. Well, pretty much all of it, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
You definitely – there's definitely a skill to talking to people on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ironic because you wouldn't think it, but
it is. You wouldn't think so, but yeah. Uh-uh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Also, working through problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole skill set. That's something from my background starting off as a vocational rehabilitation teacher, teaching those non-visual skills. It's very obvious that there's definitely some people who pick up things mm-hmm. easier than others, and some people need things explained differently, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that's okay. You just have to get creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Or like when I've noticed lately when a customer asks for like a book or whatnot and I have to do a bit of research, I either talk my way through the process mm-hmm. or I've started to hum it, which is great for the people on the other end.
I do that too, and I talk my – and they're like, huh? What? I'm sorry. I'm talking to myself. I'm trying to walk myself through this. I'm sorry.
I'm like, oh, I'm just humming what I'm doing for no reason whatsoever. So sorry. Okay, last question. Westover says she believes she could be remade by mind recast at her university. And in the end, she writes that she is a changed person from the person she was as her father's daughter and from her 16-year-old self. You could call this selfhood many things, she writes. Transformation, metamorphosis, falsity, betrayal. I call it an education. What do you think? What do you make of these final lines? Well, she went through all that. She went through a transformation
yep.
and a metamorphosis.
Yep.
But through each phase of her life, she is learning. She is mm-hmm. educating
exactly.
herself to be who she currently is. And she will continue to do that for mm-hmm. the rest of her
life. I think she forgot one, trauma, because she went through that too.
Mm. Boy, did she.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just feel like a lot of that, all those words, it's change,
mm-hmm.
right? She
yeah.
developed, she changed, she is no longer the same person she was back
right.
when she was 16. And depending on who you ask, all those words could be applied, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's betraying them. Or she's gotten educated, or, like, there's a whole bunch of different labels people can put to it. But at the end of the day, she's changed.
Yeah.
Which I believe is a good change.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Having a better grasp of the world and mm-hmm. Just the opportunities out there.
Becoming independent, mm-hmm. thinking for herself mm-hmm. rather than her dad thinking for her and being under his thumb and ending up like her mom.
Yeah. And she's continuously learning and evolving. And, it's not something that, okay, well, she got her PhD and it stops. She's
right.
done. She's done growing. She's done learning. This is going to be a lifelong thing.
Well, not only that, when she has kids,
yeah.
They're going to grow up, knowing her mom went through all that.
Yeah.
Their mom went through all that. And, they're going to get the same opportunities now mm-hmm. that her mom gave herself.
Yeah.
So she's not going to end up on that that hill doing that metal work. And,
mm-hmm.
So the other brother, too, the Oh, what's the other brother?
There was
Tyler.
Okay.
Tyler.
Yep.
Is that the one that was married and had the kids?
Yep.
I think they all married and had kids.
Well, I meant the one that stood up for her at the end.
Yeah. Tyler.
You know, those kids will be better for, you know, because he doesn't work on that. He didn't work on that.
No.
What do you call it?
Mm-mm.
I don't know what you call it. I called it a hill. I don't know.
The scrapyard?
Scrapyard. There you go. Yeah. Thank you. So. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like he did to an extent. Like, he stood up to his father and said, I'll come help you this afternoon, not this morning.
Right. It was – he didn't – I mean, but it wasn't his life.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, I'd like to point out, I feel like every single one of the siblings who went off and got education didn't have a major accident happen. For all the kids that remained there working, helping with the scrapyard and everything, I feel like every single one of them had some incident happen.
Yeah.
Just fun little observation.
You know, speaking of that, the accidents, but you remember, you know, that let's talk about that, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
He, at first, when he came back, he was seemed like he was a different person. He was going to be a great big brother to Tara. And but then he started doing some weird things and but then she was working out in the scrapyard running the – I don't know what you call that machine, but it was crunching the metal or whatever.
Kind of like the life of Jaws.
Yeah. And but he come out and he got all mad at the dad for making his sister do that and push the dad. And I'm like, one minute you're torturing the girl and then the next minute you're
standing up
for her. I didn't understand.
He said, you brace me. I will do it. That way you're not in the harm.
Yeah.
Like he's putting himself at harm's
risk.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't know.
It's a very hot, cold relationship. And you can see how conflicted she was, too, about her family throughout the book. Even up at the end when they completely said, yeah, you're not part of this family.
Mm-hmm.
Like how much that shattered her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how much she wanted to be part of the family despite everything.
Because that's all she ever knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was very...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the questions. I did skip over a couple, Leland. I'm sorry, there was 14 that would have taken.
It's okay.
We would have been here for 82 hours.
I found these lovely questions on the internet off of a college's website.
Oh, okay.
Which they pulled their questions and modified them from, like, Penguin House printing. Apparently, there were some, like, questions posted there, and they took them and modified them. And
sure.
So... I thought they were very thought-provoking and fun questions. Mm-hmm. So
I agree. You can do it every month from now on.
Thank you. I passed. So this was my interview.
Thanks. It really helped out this week. And they were actually really good questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We got today. Any final thoughts on this book?
You know, again, don't go by what we say. If you think you might be interested in reading it, just read it. You know, come up with your own conclusions. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody has their own opinion, and everybody likes what they like. And it's not always the same thing.
Yeah, like you really liked what happened to the Bennets because you do like mystery and detective fiction. Mm-hmm. And I was the opposite on that book, but this book I really liked and you were kind of the opposite on it. So it's like we're so much alike in some ways, but then we get to what we read and we're like,
whoo! Totally different.
Yeah.
And here I am enjoying all the books I've read so far because I find all the things in something I like and that's what I look at.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't really look at the drawbacks too much. These are things I like. I enjoy it and I'm happy.
Yeah.
Entertained.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easily entertained.
But like I said, the storyline of her, I liked. Maybe it was the part with the brother and then the dad. Okay. Maybe I was just so upset about that's what made, I don't know. I just, sometimes I would get angry reading that book because it's like, why, you know, why?
Do you feel like it conflicts with your own understanding of the role of a brother and a father?
Maybe.
Like, because it's so drastically opposed to that
idea
of, in your head, what
yeah,
that should look
right,
like.
Right, right. Because I, you know, and I had the best dad, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys think you have the best dad.
Mm-hmm.
You're wrong, but no.
Well.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But, you know, I would never. Yeah, my dad would. Yeah. And yeah. my mom, I tell you what, she would not. My dad, no. She set my dad straight numerous times. Oh, gosh. So she would never, ever be. Let my dad do anything like that or condone anything uh-huh. like that. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe that was it.
Mm. Well, that's all I got.
All right.
Wait, did I give less slots? Oh, I really like this book. Also, if you really like this or if you read this book and really like it, another one that's really good is Made by Stephanie Land. They did make that one into a Netflix series. So I have read that book and watched that series. And the Netflix series is loosely based off of it. So there is some embellishments. And some of the clients are different, but kind of like the core part of the clients are the same. So if you like this one, go read that one. It's also really good. The author of that, Maid, has another book that just came out. And I haven't read that one, but I am on the hold list for it. So
okay.
I should get in about 4 to 5 months. Because I'm too cheap to buy books.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
they're
too
expensive.
Cheap, or they would you be broke if you did buy the books?
Exactly.
Because a lot of books bought.
And then you have to have space for them.
But now I have I've had my Cricut for a couple of years, and I'm probably broke because of that.
Oh,
I have a whole closet in my spare room that's just organized Cricut stuff. It's.
I have a bunch of craft stuff. It's not organized, but I have craft stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do I do anything with it? Oh, no.
Sometimes.
I made a coaster the other day. I painted a coaster. It's still sitting there. I needed it to dry. Well, it's been drying for a week or two.
Maybe another week or so it'll be fully
it'll
dry.
It'll be cured, man.
That paint by numbers kit I got, I finally finished the first one, and I'm like halfway through the second one. So I did go to the store and get some picture frames to put them in, to hang them in my bathroom. They're too big for the picture frames.
Oh, no.
Like, they're too thick because it's on canvas.
Yeah.
So I don't – we'll talk about that later, but I'm going to need suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will talk. I might have a suggestion for you.
Okay, cool.
Anyway.
Well.
Anywho.
Well, that's all we have for you today.
We'll see you guys next year.
Happy holidays. Have a safe new year, and we'll see you back in January.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.